papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
This would be the Media Project, an opportunity for a half hour of analysis and insight. Insight, maybe. Commentary for sure on the media issues of the week. And we thank you for joining us. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Shartok of Northeast Public Radio.
You are such a pro, Rex, and we are so lucky to have you leading this program. Thank you for doing it.
Leading. Well, you're welcome. Thank you. It's my pleasure to do what I can to support public radio and all the good that it brings to the community.
All public radio or just, you know, or WAMC where you're appearing?
See,
right?
Yeah.
You just can't even give the guy a compliment. You know?
It's tough around here. It's tough. It always is. Barbara Lombardo is here, formerly executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record in Troy. How are you?
I'm here. I'm delighted to be here.
And Judy Patrick, vice president of the New York Press Association and formerly editor of the Gazette in Schenectady.
I am here and loaded for bear. Let's go.
Okay. Here we go. Here comes a letter, because we ask folks to feel free about writing. This comes from a lawyer in Troy who asks, I'd be interested in the thoughts of panel members about the fairly recent practice of the New York Times providing information about how articles were developed, who wrote them, etc. For example, this past Sunday, there was a fairly long piece, and it's often written by the article's author with background on a major article. The magazine section publishes bios and photos of its authors, and we even get a couple of sentences about the persons who constructed the Sunday crossword puzzle. So what do you think? Should we be telling people more about how articles are done and who our people are?
And where does it stop? Should you also tell them what their political predilections are? Obviously, some junior genius has figured out that you should do this kind of thing to make your rather turgid people more approachable. That's what I think is going on here. And by the way, as my late mother used to say, they're all doing it now. It ain't only the New York Times.
I like it. I really like it. 25 years ago, the Gannett Company that owned the Saratogian at the time distributed a VHS tape to share with its papers called The Image of Arrogance. And it was to get you thinking about why the public didn't love the press. And part of it was our image of arrogance, that we didn't admit to our mistakes. There was not enough transparency. People didn't understand where our news was coming from and how we got it. And I think there's also a natural curiosity. And people will like us better, I think, which wouldn't be the only reason to do it. But just to let people know where the news is coming from, how we got to it, it's interesting. That's why we're talking about those types of issues. That's why this show exists.
You know, it's interesting that Alan tried to dismiss this by calling it a junior genius, but it's actually genius because what we're trying to do.
You can be a genius, but still junior.
But you were being dismissive.
You could be a genius and still be senior. You could.
But this is part of an industry trend to increase trust. And part of it is trying to explain to people what we do and how we do it. A lot of times people have a question, well, why did you write that story? I mean, sometimes it's really interesting how we came to write a particular story. Sometimes it's just luck of checking out a source at a certain time. So I think people are really interested in the press, and this is a good development. I can't get enough of it personally, but maybe it's just because I'm interested in the media.
Well, to what extent, though, do you think that it is not driven so much by the desire to be transparent, which is one of the key values of ethical journalism, according to the Code of Ethics of the Society of Professional Journalists?
Oh, God.
But to what extent is it driven by... there's somebody grumbling over in the corner. To what extent is it driven by marketing? Because we know that the one element of the media that has not lost trust in the eyes of the public are local television anchors.
Exactly.
So maybe we're trying, the rest of us, to be more like
people.
And more like public radio, yeah. But be more in their living rooms, more people that they can relate to.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, well, it depends on how far you go.
There's a line that you have to tread.
Where's that line? I mean, for example, if you're reading it, do you want to know about sexual orientation? Where should the line go? If you want to tell about the person, then why not go all the way?
It depends on the story and what's relevant.
And it depends on the beat as well. One of the things we try to do is encourage reporters and editors to get out in the community and become involved. You can't be involved by stumping for a particular candidate, but you can be involved by, you know, being at the local grocery store, planting flowers in the park. You want to be seen as living in the community you often cover. So, yes?
Well, no, I didn't mean to interrupt because I get a letter that I interrupted.
Go ahead.
Okay, can I go up?
To your heart's content.
Okay,
please feel free.
So here's the deal. We've had a couple of people write and say on our panel that we have every day, why don't you have any black people on your program?
But you do.
Well, of course we do. And that's the beauty of it, that we don't say, and now from our black person. Now you could see that on TV, but you can't see it
TV.
On the radio, right? Mm-hmm. So should that go into the, because as Rex has often said, and I absolutely respect him for it, is that you want to hire people who can relate to various communities and can be welcomed in them and do it. So should you tell that the reporter, an African-American, did this? I mean, I wouldn't do it, but should you?
I think that Barbara's point that there is line, there's a point. Do you focus on this or that? You know, you've also said in the past that you think that every article ought to have a disclosure of a reporter's political persuasion and their background. And I don't know, again, how far do
Modest
you go
proposal.
With this? In my background, would it include where I come from or something,
sure.
or what college you went to? And because all of these things shape our biases. It's just that for years, we pretended that we were this sort of invisible transmuter of information and that there was something entirely neutral about the act of journalism. That's not the case. And so in recognition of that, we need to be a little bit more transparent, but I don't think to the point of necessarily providing a biographical sketch and then column next to every article that's published under someone's byline.
Well, it's a tough one because, as you've said, Rex, it's a question of how far do you go? And somebody's got to make that decision, because once you say, okay, race is not appropriate in that little bio, or sexual orientation is not appropriate in that bio, and if in fact those stories relate to those subjects, you know, it might be very interesting.
You know, the web, the digital world allows you to put a profile, a short bio of every reporter and editor on your website, and when you click on a story, you can click on the byline and you can go to the bio, and many organizations, you can read exactly where they went to school, exactly where they grew up, whether they like to hike or roller skate.
And if there's a picture.
Or there's a picture.
You know that somebody is black or not.
And you can see a list of the stories they write, so you can see what they're interested in writing about.
Mm-hmm.
This is all in the name of letting the people know more about the journalists that are doing the good work out there.
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you, and I'm sure you'll all jump down my throat on this one.
Oh, boy.
Let's do it
before he even says it.
But I really think that this is market-driven. I think you guys have said that already. Newspapers are having their lunches or their pages eaten by, you know, television and public radio and other people. Somebody told me yesterday that newspapers really wasn't about the paper product anymore. It was all about digital.
Certainly. Absolutely true. You know, paper is expensive, and the fuel to deliver all those newspapers, imagine that. I mean, think of the carbon footprint that newspapers cause. Exactly.
And you said a long time ago, you said that it wasn't going to be all that long before there will be no paper product.
There will come a time. But don't get on your high horse too much, Alan. I mean,
what
I think
horse?
That every listener of WAMC knows the name of your dog. And this has something to do with marketing, doesn't it?
Yeah,
This is not just because Murray is important to the programming here.
No, that's true.
Yeah, okay. So if you have thoughts about this, folks, media@wamc.org is how you can communicate with us. And maybe, like Jill from Troy, we'll read your letter and talk about nonsense relating to it rather than the substance thereof. No, kidding. Thanks
very
much.
I like that because it meant that Alan was barking up the wrong tree.
Oh, what clever folks. Hey, the other interesting element in the media, not the other, but one certainly interesting element that we're dealing with here is this question among the Democratic presidential candidates of whether or not they will appear on Fox News. Bernie Sanders did a Fox News town hall, and the president was quite surprised and upset that there were people cheering and laughing. He used a personal pronoun like our audience, as though he was a part of Fox News. But now Elizabeth Warren has said that she's not going to be on Fox News. She says, a Fox News town hall adds money to the hate-for-profit machine. And so she's not going to do it. But Amy Klobuchar did, in addition to Bernie Sanders, Pete Buttigieg, Kirsten Gillibrand's going to do one. So
she's going to lift herself out of the 0 to 1% range of people who are going to say that about her.
A little unnecessary shot. Oops, sorry, didn't mean to be diminutive there. So should we applaud or criticize candidates who choose their media platforms?
Let's criticize them. I would criticize them because what I am concerned about, not so much is this free publicity it will give her campaign right now. What I'm worried about, if she's elected president, will she exclude Fox and their viewers from covering her events? Or, I mean, because if she runs for president, she needs to be president of the Fox viewers as well as the MSNBC viewers and the CNN viewers.
Well, clearly, if Bernie was on, which I think indicated that it's possible that Murdoch thinks he may be the president at some point, but I don't know. If Bernie was on, you got to figure somebody was going to vote for him who was heard him on Fox, right? And from a political point of view, it's not a dumb thing to do.
History, though, suggests it's very small. That is, in 2016, only 1% of Bernie Sanders' primary voters and 4% of Hillary Clinton's primary voters said that Fox was their main source of news.
Well, right. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, we know that the present occupant of the White House won by 70,000 stinking votes. And you got to figure that every one of those votes becomes crucial, especially in key electoral states. So, sure, I think Bernie's very smart to go on. And while I'm a big Elizabeth Warren fan, my senator, you know, I just think it's a mistake to say that.
I wouldn't criticize or applaud her. I really don't care. I think I'm with the majority of Democrats who don't care whether she is on Fox News or not. For the Democratic primaries, as Rex pointed out from those other statistics, the voters in the primaries are not Fox listeners. Now, if she became the nominee or she's doing things that ought to be covered, Fox as a news outlet should still be covering her. Now she's thumbed her nose at them. That might not be a great
But put the shoe on the other foot. Donald Trump has not done an interview with PBS, surely. Mm-hmm. And he clearly favors most of the interviews he's done have been with Fox or with the CBN, the Christian Broadcasting Network, not with, let's say, the more fact-based outlets. And when he has done interviews with serious journalists, and I don't mean to disparage Chris Wallace. Everybody always says, oh, that's the exception on Fox. But remember what trouble he got into when he sat down with Lester Holt of NBC. That's what was the prima facie case for obstruction of justice.
What I do regret, and I was going to bring up Chris Wallace, when you have a legitimate journalist on Fox and he's been dissed along with the entire station, I do regret that. I think that's a mistake on her part.
Certainly it's a good play by Elizabeth Warren because she's getting a lot of press out of just not doing it, which is in a field of 22 or 23 candidates, any press is good at this point.
Well, you know, Judy, but not as much press as Bernie got for going on and showing himself to be a hearty fellow, well met.
By the way, by way of divulging personal biases, I believe you've again endorsed Bernie Sanders for president, haven't you? Oh, last time you did, just not this time?
Last time I said, it wasn't an endorsement. We don't endorse around here. I said, wait,
he said he voted for him.
That's exactly right.
We wouldn't consider that an endorsement.
Well, no. It's not an endorsement. It's just that I want everybody to know where I'm coming from. So when I talk,
sounds like a marketing thing.
It might well be the kind of thing that you folks at the Times Union should learn something from.
Exactly. That's by way of me offering this, that just by full disclosure, at the end of last week's show, I mentioned that my daughter has become a political organizer. She is a government major in college, and she's now working, in fact, for Elizabeth Warren.
Joe Hill, where working people do organize. That's where you'll find Joe Hill or your wonderful daughter.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I'm sure you have a lot of control over your daughter has a lot of control over you.
If only.
So is that anything you need to handle in-house?
It's an interesting question because what led us to this conversation last week was the editorial page, the opinion editor of the New York Times, taking himself out of the conversation about the presidential race because his brother, Michael Bennett, the senator from Colorado, is running for president. So
I said ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
Well, really. I think perhaps if your daughter runs for president, you might have an issue to deal with.
Or if your brother is...
And that may happen one day.
Or if your brother is Chris Cuomo and you interview him on your air.
Yeah. That's problematic, isn't it?
It is.
I think it is, certainly. It does seem to me that the little back and forth when Governor Cuomo goes on the air to be interviewed by his brother, Christopher Cuomo, the governor incites this little back and forth, this friendly family rivalry thing, which seems inappropriate to me.
You know, in my little town of Great Barrington, Massachusetts, which is probably the best town in all of America, certainly the Smithsonian thought so and said so. Nevertheless,
what year was that?
A couple of years ago.
Oh, okay.
It was back when the Berkshire Eagle won a Pulitzer Prize. Go ahead.
What year was that, just to make it
clear? 1954. It was very good.
Okay.
That's a good year.
Great work.
But we have in our little town a wonderful newspaper editor. She writes a little newspaper, and everything that comes, she sits at the Board of Selectmen, and she writes down everything that happens, and she tells you when every meeting was and all the rest of it. Well, she ran and won for an obscure public office in Great Barrington, really sort of low down on the on the chain. Is that dangerous when journalists run for political office?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't
agree
do
with
it.
You, Alan. Yeah.
Don't do it. It's even dangerous when a publisher, this has happened before, newspaper publishers have run for office, and it really puts their journalists into a really awkward situation. What do you do when you say, well, my former publisher is running for governor? That would not be good. So you can't do it. One of my former colleagues, Dan Lynch, who was the managing editor of the Times Union before I came to that job.
Has he passed now?
Yes, he has. But Dan ran for the assembly after he left the Times Union, and it was an awkward situation. And subsequently, after he lost, he blamed the Times Union for his loss.
Really?
Because we hadn't covered him adequately.
Well, he has, I liked him. He has sort of mercurial temper.
You like that, huh? Mm-hmm. Media at WAMC.org is how you participate. Just a little bit ancillary to this is there's now a radio station in Connecticut, by the way, that bills itself. It's rebranded itself as Trump 103.3, and they are doing an ultra-conservative talk format. They call themselves the Brave New Voice of Freedom. So they've got Bill O'Reilly and Mike Gallagher.
But the same ones that all the other guys have.
Yeah.
They're really laying it out and saying we're it. So this is what I call the red meat syndrome. You know, you got a base, you throw them red meat. But then along comes somebody else, throws them a little bit of a bigger piece of red meat. This is the biggest piece of red meat, naming your radio station after the guy you're fawning over.
If you remember when Trump thought he was going to lose the election back in 2016, there was this discussion about Trump TV. You got to wonder whether or not he will sue these people for the use of his name, because he does like to get money for the use of his name.
Ah, come on.
That's a good thought.
Your tongue is in your cheek.
Beg your pardon?
Your tongue is in your cheek.
Oh, tongue in cheek. There you go.
The
absolutely.
Way this blurs the line between government and media is really unnerving to me. So it's one thing to have a station on one side or the other where you know what the political leanings of that station might be, but to call it the name of the president of the United States just scares the heck out of me that this is not good.
Mm. But there is a new study, actually, from the RAND Corporation that points out that American journalism has, in fact, become more subjective generally.
Absolutely.
Researchers looked at a 28-year period from 1989 to 2017, and what's interesting is that, of course, during that same time frame, journalism was going outside the traditional media, like newspapers and broadcasts. That's when 24-hour cable became a big deal. That's when digital outlets came along. And at the same time, what happened was, according to RAND, there's now quantitative evidence for what we can all see in the media landscape. Quote, journalism in the U.S. has become more subjective and consists less of the detailed event or context-based reporting that used to characterize news coverage.
Yeah, when you first started to read that article, didn't you have the same response as I did? Like, no duh.
Yep.
Really? So yeah, they did quantify something that we can see and hear and feel and can talk about anecdotally. I thought it was interesting that when they the RAND Corporation was talking about truth decay, which I thought was kind of clever, that the four things that they were worried about were increasing disagreement about facts, blurring between opinion and fact, increase in the relative volume of opinion over fact, and declining trust in formerly respected sources of factual information.
Come on now, you guys know.
That is worrisome.
Come on now, you guys know that Rex in our little town of Albany here, and you know, there are two or three stations, and they have the same people on, all these same people you just read off. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to name it Trump Radio, but some smart political scientist will figure out, or a communication person will figure out, a way to assign values to each of these stations. Are they 100% that way? Are they 80% that way? But who cares? We know it when we see it, right?
So this study finds that journalism has become more subjective. In part, it's become more interesting. If you give a truly objective recitation of events, it's not interesting. It's just facts. Adding the
content. It's boring.
It's boring, and people won't read it. You're seeing journalism do more stories about people, and that could be interpreted as being subjective.
Now, wait a second. Wait.
The woman struggling to overcome cancer. That might be perceived as subjective.
Yeah, but wait a second. If you take the New York Times, and I say to you, panel, is the New York Times more liberal or more conservative? Come on, if you're not lying, you know it's more liberal. You know, they go out of their way to give other views, to write stories about other things that are happening, but it's a liberal newspaper, isn't it?
It's a very interesting question. I mean, obviously the opinion pages, even though they go out of their way to have conservative columnists, the opinion pages are definitely liberal. But in the context of what news you choose, isn't a journalistic focus on bringing power to the powerless and justice to those who have been deprived, isn't that intrinsically liberal?
Yes.
I mean, and that is part of the job of journalism, isn't it? I mean, I think journalism is kind of, in its calling, a somewhat liberal undertaking.
You said interesting, Rex. as you know, there are two people talking to two older people talking to each other. I'm cleaning this up a bit. On the boardwalk, one said, my son sent me to finishing school. And what did you learn in finishing school? I learned to say interesting rather than BS.
Well, I appreciate the analysis. That's
what
we promised.
No, but I agree with Rex. I mean, journalism has some...
Of course you do.
Of course I do. I mean, you know why? Because we're right. And we tend to have a belief in democracy, a belief in encouraging people to be able to read, to be involved in civics, and to encourage voting. I think those are things that I don't have a problem being biased about. I think that those are good values for our country to espouse.
Nevertheless, there
are... Do you think conservatives...
Nevertheless...
That's a liberal or conservative
Nevertheless,
view?
If you take a look at a paper like the Washington Examiner, it's a conservative newspaper, right? It was founded by the Reverend Moon, I believe, and it has been always seen as the right wing of the Washington Press. You don't have to be a political scientist or a social scientist to assign values to each of the stories. You know it's a conservative newspaper. Now, when you say, well, this is my idea, says Judy, somewhat pompously, by the way.
I'm so glad somebody else is taking my mantle of pompous. This is very good.
So when you say, right, that that's what newspapers are supposed to be, that's not what the people at the Washington Examiner are thinking. They're thinking we need American individualism and capitalism or whatever.
I thought we were talking about the New York Times, and now you're talking about the Washington Examiner.
That's because I can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Definitely switching among topics here. Very good. Very good.
But sort of staying on the same topic, last week you took a shot because... I tried to talk about, I'm looking at Alan Shartok as I say you. Sorry about that, radio listeners. So we were talking about context, and it had to do with, you know, similar topic of whether stories are factual, whether there's opinion. And when I said good news outlets will include context in their stories, and you said, that's opinion. Something to that effect, right? It's opinion. And then we ran
opinion.
Out of time.
Well,
so when
I think
Judy
this
is
means...
saying that stories need to be more interesting... It's not putting opinion in if you're putting context in, and that can make a story more interesting.
Absolutely. Again, nowadays reporters have been taught that ethical journalism is not just a recitation of what they've seen. It is trying to give people the truth. And sometimes the truth requires what other people say is subjectivity or it is analysis. You know, that's what the fact checker is all about. Fact checking as a fundamental of journalism is now pretty well established. But I think the Trump team considers it to be a bias in journalism.
Well, that said, we could grudgingly agree with Alan that, at least I do, from the point of view that your choice of what you're going to cover, how you cover it, your sentence,
and who you quote.
Who you quote, your sentence structure, the verbs that you use, the headlines that you use, all reflect a certain kind of bias, whether we're talking about the abortion ban bills now or how immigration is being handled. If we were to go back and look at the coverage of this week and examine it, depending on which outlet you're representing, the approach to the story, the tone of the story, the context that's provided is going to vary.
Well, it's so interesting because this terrible abortion bill, I've gone and done it, is so interesting in that in Alabama, you know, a doctor who does abortions could go to jail for 99 years, lifetime in jail. But the one thing that rises to the top of every analysis, especially the negative analysis of this bill, is that if a uncle or a father or a relative assaults a 12-year-old kid and she becomes pregnant, she has to have the baby because rape and incest are not excluded.
And I would add to that I heard that said almost word for word on Fox News yesterday in its reporting of what this bill would do.
Yeah, which is interesting.
What this new law would do.
Which is interesting because what's happening is that some of the arch conservatives in this country are speaking out against the bill. Pat Robertson, I believe, was quoted at some length on that. And again, who you go to ask the question? And Rex, the thing I think about the Times Union or Judy, the Schenectady Gazette, or Barbara,
the Saratogian.
How quick we forget the papers that still run his column.
Yeah. And a great paper it is that each of these people obviously have an orientation which will permit the running of certain columns, not other columns, that kind of thing.
That's the opinion pages. Okay, we're out of time. We'll get back to this next week. This is why you have to tune in, folks, to this program every single week, because we will carry on this conversation again, and you don't want to miss it. Alan Chartok, Barbara Lombardo, Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith. Thanks for joining us this week on The Media Project.
They used to work like hell just for romance, but finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper gill. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Barbara Lombardo is a journalism professor at the University at Albany and former executive editor of the Saratogian and the Troy Record. And Judy Patrick is the vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Now, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's Unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally...